With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
We're very unprotected.
Very, you know, if that's interesting.
You see, there's, you know, there's the dancers, you know, you have
the unions.
Unions. Yeah. You have the actors,
models,
you have
actors,
unions.
Big unions.
So yeah, true. What the fuck is the designers?
Yes.
Excuse me.
It's a really
totally unprotected.
Yeah, that's true.
Hi, I'm Cami Charrier.
And I'm Monica Ainley. And you're listening to Fashion No Filter,
where we sit down with some of the lead creatives, strategic thinkers, and emerging talent around us to interpret the ins and outs of the fashion industry today.
Greetings, No Filterites. Monica here to introduce you to our third and final episode from our little overseas jaunt to the US of A. Ah, yes, FNF took Manhattan, guys. Such memories. It was a beautiful bonding experience for Cami and I. A wild week of adventures and a couple of misadventures too, but I'm not going to go into those now. And a series of interviews with some fascinating and fashionable New Yorkers. Our first stop in NYC proved to be a truly unique experience. On our first morning in the city, we visited Francisco Costa's spectacular uptown apartment, which looks kind of like a museum. It's all crisp white walls, incredible artwork, and beautiful oak furniture, the very, very best variety of Brazilian minimalist chic without being intimidating. The place just kind of had a welcoming soul, which is not unlike our guest, whom we felt like we'd kind of known for years. It was a really interesting interview because Francisco was brutally honest about his own experiences and the state of big fashion business today. For those who aren't familiar with his work, Mr. Costa was the women's creative director of Calvin Klein for 13 years, beginning in 2003, twice bringing home the coveted CFDA Women's Wear Designer of the Year award during his tenure. In our interview, Costa opens up about his youth in Brazil, his relationship with his inspirational mother, and the circumstances of his eventual departure from Calvin Klein. He also introduces us to his highly creative and sustainable new beauty venture, Costa Brazil, made entirely from ingredients he personally sourced in the Amazon. It was our honor to be able to have such a frank conversation with Francisco. Rare in an industry where so often things get over-PR'd, where so many people tend to just stick to their media-trained answers rather than opening up. Actually, we've been really lucky in this regard with all of our guests so far. So, hashtag no filter, guys. Now sit back, pour yourself some coffee, or some tea, or wine, and enjoy.
Thanks for joining us, Francisco.
Oh, what a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We're here in New York in your beautiful apartment, and we are going to ask you some questions starting
there
now.
There we go.
So let's start from the very beginning, as we want the whole life story.
You think I remember?
Well, going back, did you always want to work in fashion growing up? And how did you get from your childhood in Brazil to landing your first job at Oscar de la Renta? Like, that's a big, it's a big jump.
This is a 20 years answer.
A 20 year answer. In a nutshell.
In a nutshell. Yes. I actually grew up in a very small town in Brazil, the state of Minas Gerais, literally like about 3,000 people. And very lucky to actually grow up in an environment where, you know, fashion was very everything. My mom was a seamstress and she had a textile shop. And she would sell textiles, fabrics and what have you. And then she all of a sudden had this vision in creating children's wear clothes, children's clothes. And And she started her own business. You know, by the time, you know, I was, you know, 15, you know, she had 125 employees, you know, and I basically grew up on a factory.
Wow.
You know, with scissors in one hand, paper in the other, and just being part of the whole environment. So I'm very lucky, basically, you know. There was no other way or nothing else interested me, you know, except for the arts, you know, cut and paste and sew and stitch and the brush, paint, and it's all of the above.
So you're like a 10-year-old with your mom. You're like, Mom, bring up that hemline. You know, let's cut that. Were you like fully seeing
totally,
this as a designer?
Totally. My mom was really insane because she was rather entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
Basically, basic education, but very entrepreneurial, very smart. She basically ran the town, right? I mean, yeah. She was like, you know, she was the mayor.
She was the unofficial
mayor
of the city. Yes.
She was. She yes. was. And she was so incredible, you know, looking back, that, for instance, she did small little actions. They were so gigantic. For instance, she, with the textile, you know, you cut the dresses and you have leftovers. So she created a community of women who would take the leftovers of the fabric and would do rugs with them. You know what I mean? Would do quilts. So she employed a whole bunch of women in the countryside with that.
So she was
then she realized that she needed the children of the women who work in the factory actually needed a place to leave their kids. So she created a house for the children. And then she realized with my uncle, they were very much involved. I mean, we grew up very, very religious, very Catholic. Church was like second home for me. And there was this something called Society St. Vincent of Paul, you know, which is a community of part of the Catholic, you know, church that dealt with the poor. So we used to go every Saturday. You have to go to the favelas, I mean, in the small town. We used to go to the hills and, you know, visit the families and assist them. So that was very much part of our lives. So she realized there's so many people in need in those areas, and they built a home for older people. People were dying, you know, so the Carmelitas, you know, nuns came into play and just ran the place. So this was like a magical sort of thing growing up with thinking that's all normal, right? This is normal. This yeah. is how it was. And she was very powerful in that sense. But she would walk into the factory backwards. I mean, she would walk in, you know, she had idea for this one dress. She literally would take the paper and the scissors and chop the pattern. She did the pattern.
Yeah.
So I have this relationship with scissors and paper, which is very intimate, you know. And that's why I felt, that's why I'm so good in a design studio, creating that sense, because I have the same relationship that I learned from her. You know, I take a paper, I drape, you know, a cut, and a pen, and a sew. So it's like really an explosion of fun, you know. And usually we do it on a body, on a person, because also she did it on a, she always draped on a kid. You know, there's always children around because they're all the models.
Yeah.
You know, so that's pretty much.
So it's in your blood entirely. And did you think, I must leave Brazil eventually to fulfill my destiny as like a big designer? Or was that sort of a more organic thing? Like, what brought you, how did you get from a small town in Brazil to New York City?
That's when it gets really perverted. My mom passed away, and my relationship with her was so, you know, amazing. And the complex, that was complex, just happened like as she dies, right? I felt him losing, you know, my lover, this woman who was everything for me, and she passed away, and my life was kind of gone.
How old were you when she passed away?
I was 17.
Oh, yeah.
So I really, it was like, wow. I'm gonna go with her, or I take off. So deliberately, I decided to leave. She would have been alive today, I probably wouldn't have left. So she kind of gave me this gift of taking off. She really allowed me to leave, you know, which is really, that's what I call perverted, because it's such a weird feeling, you know. For sure, I wouldn't have been here if she was still alive.
So you get to New York. I read that you didn't speak English when you came.
Not at all. I still don't.
Wait, what language are we speaking right now?
I don't understand.
I just got off a flight. I have no idea.
It's okay.
What's going
you
on.
Can correct me.
Your English is perfect.
It's fine. I sound English you. And make very stupid mistakes. So we're fine with semi-English speakers on this podcast.
Well, I, according to some of our North American listeners, have a very confusing and pretentious accent, which I do not appreciate. There's nothing I can do about it. We're all culturally confused here, so that's
this
perfect.
Is great.
So you got to New York and you learned. How did you learn
English?
You
know, I did not speak English. I mean, I had high school English, which is very archaic, you know, from a small town. My decision to come was just, I had to learn English. So I registered myself at Hunter College, which again is the State University of New York. And basically, I was taking classes at Hunter College in the mornings, and because fashion was what was next for me, fashion or photography or some way related, I knew it was fashion, but fashion was a very intimate relationship I already had, so I thought maybe I could go in another area. So I registered myself at FIT, you know, as a continuing ed student, you know, at night. So I was doing English classes in the morning, you know, and at night I was going to FIT, trying to just get into the vocabulary, you know, understand, you know, a little bit more. And it was really like a super fast course, you know. I learned quite fast, I guess. But I also remembered something really funny, because my 101 class at FIT was fashion 101, whatever, and it was about silhouettes, what was happening in the world of fashion. And I couldn't communicate at all. It was just very hard to communicate. And I said, you know what? Pictures, you know. I had a Polaroid camera. And every week, I'll go around the city registering what's happening in fashion, photographing all the windows. I'll come with, you know, instead of just an idea, I actually come to the class with pictures. And I somewhat very little vocabulary.
Very much like a new era. Pictures worth a thousand words.
I was already telling
the
story.
No, because the digital era, like as we know now, pictures in fashion mean everything.
Sure.
And I think back then that wasn't the case.
Sure.
So you sort of entered the digital era yourself without,
yeah,
without being told to.
I was kind of obliged to, because I mean, how to communicate,
yeah,
how
yeah,
to express, you know, the what I actually was seeing.
Yeah.
You know, so it was cool. I wish I had it.
And so why Oscar de la Renta? How did you land there? I mean, obviously he's one of the most iconic, yeah. It is one of the most iconic American fashion.
How did you wind up getting that?
At Oscar. Yeah. I mean, it was amazing. What happened was in this interim after FIT, what have you, I got out of school, I got a job at Bill Blass Dresses, which is a licensee of this company called the Hero Group. And that lasted, you know, 3 months maybe, because what happened with the person who hired me for that job, who wasn't at Bill Blass, moved to Bill Blass, so I ended up going with him. And then as a word of mouth within the same company, from Runic, he just gave me this promotion to go to work with Oscar. He just acquired the name Oscar de la Renta, you know, for a secondary line, which I started. And Oscar saw my work and just come and work with me. It was just like that. So,
easy peasy.
It was really beautiful, because working with Oscar was just being at home. Let's put it that way. You know, you ate at the office. There was like always a gathering, there was always an exchange of communication. You know, the most inspiring things was his trips, for instance, you know, and at one point he started taking everybody on his trips, which was great.
That's cool.
It was really, really wonderful. But I learned so many things I learned the craft. Precisely. The refinement of how to cut real dress and how to really understand the textile. I really learned with Oscar. And so is color. Mm. I came from a very small town, Brazil, and my colors were white, jeans, you can call it collar, you know, white denim, black. Very basic.
That's surprising to me. I would have always thought this very was a very basic. Colorful place.
Today, perhaps a little more.
Okay.
I think, because I think the world has become a little more strange in the sense
globalized.
That people are very, you know,
yes.
So much, so overdone,
yeah.
Right? At the time, I mean, where I grew up, was so simple. Which is so minimal,
but
so
quiet.
It's kind
of like this apartment has a very Brazilian vibe to it.
It does.
Right?
It does.
Sort of like these natural colors.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Nature. Lots of like greens.
Yeah, I mean, it's how can you not, right? I mean, nature is really, I grew up with nature, so it's just an extension of who I am. Love, I love, and love waterfalls, love, you know, going on walks, love hiking. It's just very much part of who I am in that sense. But also growing up in a small town, that's what you did.
Yeah.
You know.
That's what I did.
And you go to the countryside,
yeah.
It's already a small town, and the weekends you go to the countryside, you know. The cows.
Apparently my first ever sentence was, I'm not going in the garden today, mommy. That was my first sentence.
That's amazing.
Clearly I was
You had other plans.
I was a city girl.
Wow.
You went on to be hired by Tom Ford, where you worked alongside Christopher Bailey and Claire White Keller.
I know. Can
what
you believe
a
it?
Team, I know.
What
and,
a team.
And
you
it
guys.
Felt like a completely different era back then, like
I know.
Pre-digital. Pre-social media, all of this. What was it like? Tell us about those,
well,
those
I think
good
Tom,
old days.
I think Tom had, he knew how to recruit, obviously.
Obviously.
I learned so much from him, you know. It's still, you know, so fun to think of that time. We lived in London, you know, we showed in Milan and what have you. It was super fun. Christopher was extremely organized, you know, very precise in how he you know, he dealt with the collection. Great working with him. You know, it was just the opposite. You know, very organic, you know, very somewhat, you know, expressive.
The Brit and the Brazilian.
Exactly, right?
Love it.
But we shared a birthday, which was very funny.
No way!
That's
yeah.
funny. What star sign are you?
Mate, I'm Taurus. So we always used to joke because, you know, the only thing that we had in common is that we love chocolate. He used to give... He used to keep the Kit Kat on his desk. All of a sudden, it was Christopher eating his Kit Kat.
Christopher and I would be
without
great
sharing.
I love a Kit Kat.
Without sharing.
No, he didn't share his Kit Kat with you. Let it be known to the public.
Now, Christopher is really, really talented and really lovely.
He
guy.
Is. He
amazing.
Is.
Claire White Keller is dressing the royals now.
And Claire.
Yeah.
Look at Claire.
She's doing so well. She
yeah,
she
she's
now.
Amazing. I think she's really blossomed. It's so exciting to see her
yes.
doing so well. And it's so beautiful, the clothes and everything she's doing. It's really exciting.
Are you guys all still yeah. friends?
I haven't been really, I haven't got in contact.
So busy.
With
them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
life gets in the way.
Yeah. Life is crazy. But I mean, it's just, I love the idea of all of those talents, all of you guys in the same place.
Oh, and you know, also who was part of Tom's posse in a way was Stefano Pilati.
Oh.
Stefano used to do, I was doing Gucci, and Stefano had just been hired for YSL under Tom. So, I mean, Tom really had a...
Wow, a whole orbit. What year would what year was
don't
this?
Don't ask me the year because I wouldn't
okay.
remember.
I should know.
2000 and something.
Is it in our notes? No. Well, you got to Calvin Klein in 2003, right?
If you're telling me,
according
yeah.
to the internet, that's when you arrived at Calvin Klein.
Yes.
Would you like to tell us?
No, I was there all along. Let me tell you this story.
We would like to tell people supervising the interview to stop laughing.
No, guys, you're not going to believe this. I was at Oscar. I went to a psychic. His name is John Marchesella, yeah. 23rd Street in Chelsea, somewhere on the basement of an apartment. Chelsea was like a different world, right?
Right.
And I'm having this reading, and the guy tells me, Calvin Klein, you know.
Like yeah. out of nowhere?
Out of nowhere. You're
oh
going to work
God.
With Calvin
Where
Klein.
Where is this psychic? I'm
going
to go.
This is
going to
be a really... The only reason I'm repeating this is because it was so out of context.
That's insane.
That I never believed it, neither... I thought this guy... Whatever.
Did the psychic know that you worked in fashion?
Oh, he did. He did. Yeah.
How did he know it's mad?
So right away, obviously, I think when you're looking for a psychic, because the wings of a change, right? You're always feeling something. I think we're all very creative people. We're always very engaged in some things. So this guy tells me that some movement around, you know, and totally ignored it. Next thing, I got a call from Florianne to meet with Tom Ford. Just, oh, he was okay. The guy got something right. You know, it was Gucci. You know, Gucci and Calvin is not too far apart. Yeah. Fine. Can you believe this?
That's insane.
8 years later. No, not 8 years later. What is it? 5 years later.
Yeah.
I ended up at Calvin and stayed.
That is.
So that's very bizarre. Yeah,
crazy.
I was there for all this time.
I wonder if that psychic's still on 23rd Street.
I was there for all this time prior to joining in 2003, I guess, yeah.
And you stayed for 13 years?
Way too long. That's what I stayed for.
No.
They say it takes 10 years to build a real reputation, so at least you're like...
13 glorious years as well. Twice you won the CFDA Women's Wear Designer of the Year.
Yes, I did.
During that time. Twice. Big deal. Let's just talk about these Calvin Klein years a little bit, because it's like pretty monumental stamp that you put on that brand.
Well, thank you. In retrospect, you know, when I look at it, I'm very proud actually of what the whole, I've never said that to you or to anyone. But today I feel very proud of it,
yeah.
Because in spite of what the situation was, which wasn't an easy situation,
yeah.
I don't know how I managed. I'm much more proud of how I actually managed to stay at that job for 13 years.
What do you mean?
Than the work itself.
But why was it?
Because it was a constant fight, you know, and I managed to keep things alive
yeah.
with very little.
Yeah.
Very little. Yeah. And I mean, it's topic for a conversation for another, for a book.
Yeah.
The lack of support, the lack of budgets, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't have budgets to do a lookbook, you know.
Wow. It's so what you assume about a big American brand. Do you think that in America they're tougher than, like, maybe, say, in Europe on creatives within mega brands?
It's completely different. I mean, Calvin is such a structure, such a genuine American, you know, iconic brand. They lived off so many different aspects, right?
Yeah.
Very, very low and very high,
yeah.
right? It's a brand that really encompasses a lot, that's the greatness of it. But the mentality of, you know, the great corporations in Europe, you know, are luxury.
Mm. Well,
they understand it very, very easily. Here is a corporation that makes, you know, starts men's shirts.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
completely
yeah.
underwear.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But like, there's nothing wrong with it.
You've got people like Guestier, when he left yeah. Balenciaga, he says that it's the same thing. He complains about being milked dry by the people at the top in the white collars who are just not listening to what you need as a creative to build a successful
I had
creative
zero support.
Yeah.
Zero, I can tell
God,
you.
God, I'm so happy you're saying this, because some of my designer friends who have been working in big, I'm not going to name any names, but really struggle with this and are so stretched, but don't feel like they can talk about it publicly. Obviously, you're not there anymore, but I think you're right to talk about it, because it's such an unfair crunch on creative. And there's also, you know, what with the pressure to create so many collections
yeah.
a year these
sure.
days.
But you see, that was really exciting, because the job became, you know, I'm the spokesperson for the brand.
Yeah.
I'm on the road all the time. You know, I'm in China, you know, it's 6 times a year. You know, I'm in Europe and every single event. So I'm like, yeah. the picture is enormous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this guy is on top of the world,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Come back home, it's just, introspecting into work, and I had to produce. Because I delegate to some extent, you know, I have to put my finger on everything. I'm very controlling,
yeah.
you know, and that's, I had to work, you know, day and night, nonstop, which is fine, because that's really what gave me the pleasure. You know, one more trip to Cannes, you know, I'll cut my head off. You know, that sense,
way,
you know, it was always like you had to do it.
Yeah.
And I had to do it. It was very much this burden to have this enormous, ginormous calendar of
yeah.
events that I had to attend. You know, I had I don't know how many tuxedos. And that's all I have in my closet was tuxedos and white t-shirts and jeans. Because this was my wardrobe, which is great. Sometimes now I wear my tuxedos during the day, but I don't care.
Sounds like my wardrobe.
And, you know, it sounds kind of glamorous. I mean, just I give an example of how, you know, what people saw from the outside was very different from what actually we were feeling. And there was moments of like totally despair, desperation. What am I doing here? You know, I could have gone to all the houses, you know, and I just failed to actually make the move, which I could have done. But I love the brand so much, you know, and I really had this passion for the brand.
Loyalty's amazing.
Because I love the aesthetic, and I got to explore, I got to, but anyways, yes, it was a great ride. It was, you know, was amazing. The brand is amazing.
Well, and it's a great match. I mean, you're somewhat of a master of minimalism and the...
Well, I think I'm much more of a reductionist.
Right.
You know, I don't like to put myself in any, you know, I'm so many things, you know, but I like the editing. I really love the editing. You know, I love to dissect things and just, you know, whatever gives me the most pleasure is where I go with it, like, in that sense. Yeah, reduction to me is what I like. But usually I start with a lot, you know.
You start with a lot of ideas and you sift them down.
I guess everybody's like that.
The glory days of Calvin.
But it's the calm.
Yeah.
You know, it's the quietness, it's the sensibility of peace that I enjoy, you know.
And why do you think, to take a step back and look at the industry as a whole, why do you think that designers are moving around so much nowadays? You know, the musical chairs that we see bounced around from one fashion house to the next every 3 years.
It's not the designers, it's
the corporations.
Crazy corporations.
Yeah, but why are they moving people around so much?
Because of numbers, right? And that's why,
but it's like a
how successful money. I was. Money.
Yeah, but it's like a presidency. You can't really get anything done in 4 years. Like, you can't. So
precisely.
If you like get rid of someone after they've only like started out.
Well,
like,
some people were
Sarah
hoping
Moore,
to get rid
no,
of
no, Sarah Moore wrote a really interesting piece saying that like it takes 10 years for a designer to build a reputation somewhere. So if you move them around, your customer cannot come on a journey with you because they only barely get to know you and you're already moving on to the next thing. So it's...
It's a reflection of the times, I think, how we live, how we obsessed, you know, how the internet changed
novelty,
our lives.
Yeah.
So it really is a reflection. So that's the thing. And there's nothing, it's not right or wrong. It's just a different time.
It's just what
and
we live
what
in today.
Yeah, yeah. You can't really, you just have to move on.
Yeah.
You really have to
absolutely.
Move on.
Absolutely. Yeah. So speaking of moving on, you parted ways. Tell us about...
Very honestly, there was a struggle there. I was very unhappy. Didn't know what to do. I had already, you know, lost some of great opportunities that I said no to. But they were just squeezing me. And I had a contract, so I don't want to leave. So they fired me because... You know, they had to fire him because they're already talking to Ralph.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But then they treated me really badly because I had a 5-year contract, which they tried to pay for 3 years. And I had to go and hire a major litigator to work with.
It's so frustrating.
So
when
that went
like
really
that.
Sour.
Yeah.
So, It was crazy.
I think it's
in that
important
sense.
For people to hear that even people that get to the very top go through hard times, then bounce back, because I think we don't talk about it enough.
No, I think designers and we are very unprotected.
Yeah.
We're very unprotected.
That's interesting.
You see there's the dancers, you know, you have
the unions.
Yeah. You have the actors,
models,
you have
actors,
unions.
Big unions.
So
yeah.
True.
What the fuck is the designers?
Yes.
Excuse me. They're,
it's a really
totally
good point.
Unprotected.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's very sad.
And you see them all. Phoebe's gone, Rafi, we don't know where. Like, everybody's sort of, like, gone into their own little world.
Because there's nowhere to go. We can't talk to a person that would give you a good...
And you're one person against these huge corporations.
It's very, very difficult. Yeah. So I hope that will change. But again, the designer world has changed, you know, in many ways. But I don't know what I'm getting to that.
Well, let's... shift gears a tiny bit here and talk about Costa Brazil.
Well, that's the greatest thing, because I was just so obviously frustrated. And didn't need an outlet, because, you know, it's just part of how we do things. I love the works of Piero Manzoni. Mm-hmm. And every time I looked, he inspired me in many parts of my career. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's one of those Bibles for me, you know, the anthology of Manzoni, because of Art of Poverty, Highs and Lows, Tongue in Cheek, you know, there's all this, you know, this tension, mm-hmm. you know. And Manzoni just inspired me to create something unique, you know, in that sense. And what was that? Aesthetically, I knew there was the vessels and this, and conceptually, the creation of something that was like edgy somewhat, again, highs and lows. And I put this book together, which was my first brand book, and I created the Costa Brazil brand. And I knew it was a lifestyle brand, you know, rooted on beauty. And it was, I can say, that was what made me survive all those last, you know, 12 months prior to leaving. So I left, and I started working in the product itself, which I had zero idea how to do it. And I didn't have much help either. Until I realized, guys, I can't be looking at labs in America or France or what have you. Should stop. The whole process was really exhausted. Took 6 months. Went to the Amazon. So I went to the Amazon on this insane trip.
Just so I understand, how close to the actual Amazon is where you grew up in Brazil? Like, were you familiar with the Amazon?
6 hours.
Okay.
On a plane.
Yeah. Fall.
Oh, on a plane.
Yeah.
So far. So you're not a child of the Amazon on any level.
No.
But you have to understand, for us, we're like, Brazilian geese all about the
Amazon. Like,
yeah,
no,
exactly.
It's like when you're in New York and someone says, I'm from France, and they're like, oh, do you know my friend Simon? I'm like, no, but it's a big place. You know? It's quite big. Like, it's quite a little big.
Yeah, so right?
You didn't grow up
even
like...
Even if you give me a surname, I'm pretty sure it's not going
to... Cultivating... Okay.
No, it's easier to... It's easier for Brazilians to go to Miami or to New York than to go to the Amazon.
Yeah, okay. It's hard to access as well.
It's way harder. For instance, the trip, you know, I flew from São Paulo to Brasilia, which is the center of Brazil. Mm-hmm. Then from Brasilia, you go to the small town called the furthest west town in the state of Acre in the Amazon. And I was imagining, you know, U.S., right? California and the East Coast. It's just as well.
Yeah.
So you fly into this town, then we drive for 5 hours, then you take a little canoe for 6.5 hours.
No.
This is my dream trip.
So were you by yourself?
Now you go.
No, that's my dream.
You gotta go.
You don't understand.
I'll set you up. It's so brilliant. It's really
Look,
fantastic.
Smell this. I'm wearing the Amazon smell.
No, I have it too, but it's my dream to go and...
Guys, it's
go and
fun,
explore.
It's wild, because like 2 minutes into the trip,
Camazon.
You know, your whole canoe is filled with water, and you don't know what to do, and the mosquitoes, and it starts rain, and it's like all four seasons.
No. But I was a scout till I was 17. I feel like I'm good man for the job.
Really,
I can do it. Yeah.
Amazing. I was terrified. I agree. It was so torturous.
Well, I'm Canadian, and I honestly think that I would be. It sounds like a real step up from Canadian canoe trips.
Guys,
I don't
maybe
know
we
I
should have a
it.
Fashion No Filter holiday. And
yeah, the three of us can go
Let's
in a canoe together.
Let's
yeah,
do it.
Perfect.
Were you always interested in the ethical side of fashion, or did that come later?
You know, if you think about what I just mentioned about my mom.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
She was beyond.
Yeah.
The fact that
she was already reusing.
She was already
tackling waste and all that.
And she was like a community organizer, creating
jobs.
Circular fashion, like reusing, like no waste.
Yes. And then I did a couple of collections, you know. For instance, I won an award from the Smithsonian, which Mrs. Obama gave me the award in Washington, which was amazing. The Cooper Hewitt, Michelle Obama.
Oof.
I mean, just dropping a name here. But I'm quite proud of that award, because the collection was Alice in Wonderland. So the collection was basically a concept of how can one buy fashion in a very basic, simple manner. You could buy fashion in a supermarket, basically. Mm-hmm. So every single piece of that collection folded on itself. So it could be packed, flat, and stacked. So once you open that, it was just like, wow. The shapes were very cool and bizarre. So I called it the Alice in the Wonderland collection because it was really spirited. And the award came to me in great company. For instance, the person who created the first computer was honored that same year. So it was like, wow, this is crazy amazing.
Very cool.
It was very cool. So obviously there's something there. I was already thinking.
Yeah.
I did another collection, which I basically recycled all the yarns from several different mills in Scotland. And the whole collection was knitwear. So I kind of I commissioned, some people to give me their waste, and I felted it, I reweaved it, and I created those amazing textures. But the whole collection was knitwear. And I remember that it was hard to talk about those things then. Neither had the, nobody cared.
And now it's almost the opposite. You feel like people talk about it for PR purposes and not because they actually care. I think it's tricky balance to get right, the sustainable question, isn't it?
Sure.
Especially in our industry where fashion and ethical seems like a little bit of an oxymoron.
I mean, totally.
Consumerism totally and annoying. Capitalism. It's complicated.
It's very annoying.
It's very complicated.
It is. It is very annoying. And one more time I hear sustainable.
Yeah.
I have to come up with another word for it.
Yeah.
I come up with another word for clean.
Conscious, maybe. Clean, I don't know.
Right? Echo.
Yeah. I don't know what it is.
Something.
Mindful. I don't know. But yeah.
And another word is clean.
Clean,
I mean,
if
you think about it, I think what we're creating here is really stands on its own because, first of all, it's the first designer brand. This is a very designer brand, in this space, which is ethical, conscious, eco-friendly, however you call it.
I would love to know the exact life cycle of your products. Like, where do you find... So is it all based on this resin, or is that like a key ingredient?
No, I'm going to show you. I have to, give me like 15 minutes because I want to burn this for you. Sophie, do you mind...
Lighter?
I need the lighter and the Brio, actually.
Yeah.
Which is sitting on that.
Right. So,
but look at this.
And where can we get this?
How gorgeous is that?
Not the coconut.
The Amazon.
No, the oil.
Well, now because of the how special the ingredients are. For instance, we are the only ones who actually have that ingredient.
Really?
I ended up buying the whole crop, the second year in a row, and. Basically, we named it Kaya, so it's registered for us, so I have exclusivity on that.
You are the only people in the world.
Yes, we are.
To
the
use
only
this.
Ones.
Yeah. Very exciting, very rare thing.
Coconut.
This is so great. That's why the beauty of the product, one has to look at this as a different kind of beauty, right?
Yeah.
It's very controlled, the batches are very, very small. You're getting pure, beauty here, and really. Really, it's sets up the difference.
But you're also putting something on your skin that only comes from the earth, which is like a pretty good concept.
Precisely.
A lot of reasons, right?
Yeah, because everything that you wash is, put in your face, your skin, your skin is the largest organ, of course. So everything that you put in, it has to be really, really great and gorgeous, yummy. And this is. So I'm very proud.
Well, people, this is the future.
It was amazing.
Of ethical beauty.
Exactly. It was so nice to hear everything about how you got to where you are in your career. I feel like so much has changed since you first came to New York. What would you, to sort of end this, what would you tell younger people who are starting their career now in the industry, who want some advice from one of the greats?
I'm hugging the
man.
The
that should
coconut.
Be an easier one. I think I was so emotional throughout my whole career. I think I haven't changed much, but I think it's so important for people to get designers today to get a little smart and get that protection that I never had, or get the smarts of people, good lawyers or people that actually back them up. I think it's the most important thing, that the talent that you have, if one has talent, I think you need to be surrounded by people that actually can shelter you and propel your career in many ways. I've been very fortunate that I didn't have that, but I'm always very curious, so it didn't matter, because here I'm into something else that's very different that I love. So I have, redirected my energy into something that's really genuine to me. And I think that authenticity, which I also hate, another word that I can't stand, but there's something about what pleases you, makes you,
So surround yourself with the right people.
Surround yourself with the right people.
That's a good...
I have one last question, actually.
Yeah.
Because the Met Gala is in a few days, I'm wondering whether you used to dress people for that.
Yes.
I dressed many people.
Tell
when
me
I
who
met
your favorite
gala.
Person to dress was.
But my first Met Gala was really fun because it was Scarlett Johansson.
Oof.
Mm. Looking absolutely gorgeous in the yellow strapless dress. I don't know if you guys remember
yes,
that picture.
I do.
It's
yes.
a very iconic picture.
Very.
And then I also dressed for the same evening, Hilary Swank, in this drop dead gorgeous aqua. satin dress, which is really beautiful. Those are really, I remember that very fondly because of my first Met Gala. And they look so amazing. Another dress I remember that was quite stunning was Elle Macpherson, in this lime green taffeta, wonder dress. But then I had her flats. So.
The body.
I mean, the body, the hair, just the lime green.
Oh, she's amazing.
And she's barefoot. So.
Can I just say I want to get married in old school Calvin Klein? It's my dream. So now we're friends.
Hold on, let me get the
sketchbook. Don't worry. I have been single for a very long time. It's nowhere near. But we have time to become friends and then we can talk about it.
Yeah, easy. Let's do it. I know.
Super. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you very much. What a pleasure.
And we'll be smelling lovely all day thanks to you.
Oh, fun.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Okay, everyone, you heard the man. Make sure to surround yourself with the right people when getting your start in the industry. And for goodness sake, never give up your childhood dreams. That's all for today. Thank you, Francisco, for joining us. And of course, thanks to all of you for tuning in. And as always, remember, if you love us, you can show your support by rating and reviewing us on iTunes. Until next time.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.